Welcome to the Very Pink Knits podcast, the companion podcast to the Very Pink Knits YouTube channel. I'm Stacy, and I'm here with Casey.
Hi there.
Casey is the media manager here at Very Pink, and she's also producing this show. If you'd like to get your knitting question on the show, just email it to podcast@verypink.com, and please tell us where you're from. And this is episode 136, so we're going to talk about things. We're going to put things in the show notes. If you'd like to see those show notes, just go to verypink.com and click the podcast tab at the top of the page and look for episode 136. Good morning, Casey. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I think that there's a cat issue at your place, maybe?
Yeah, he's on my face.
Because I'm having dog issues here, too, and the dogs keep walking by the podcast room and staring at me and then jingling their tags. And so yeah. We might have a heavy pet episode this time, pet noises. Your cats just keep knocking things down.
Well, they just keep trying to get into the door. I've tried to shut the door, but they're sliding doors, so they try to wiggle their way in.
Oh, clever. Aren't the doors heavy?
No, not really. They're just like barn doors.
Okay, well, so, we'll see how
anyway, if you hear rattling, it's the cat trying to open the door.
And if you hear jingling, it's the dogs staring at me. Because I have a baby gate up, so they can't come in here to really bother me. They can just stand outside there and stare at me. And that's, I can get over that. I can watch them do that. But then they shake their bodies and everything jingles. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Yeah, so how is knitting going? What are you working on right now?
Well, I finished my giant bulky steeked sweater, so that was exciting, but it's too hot to wear.
Right.
And then I just started this. It was super, like, not on my queue, anything, but I was going through my stash, and I found some yarn that I had bought for a project, and I thought about making that project, and then I started looking at it and was like, I don't really want to make that. So, but it's this Barocco yarn that's a mixture of ultra fine merino and 4% nylon. It's really nice. So
what are you gonna make with it?
I'm making it's just like a tunic kind of top, short sleeve tunic. So it's gonna be very sweatshirty kind of wear.
Nice. Yeah. So. Oh, speaking of sweatshirty, a few episodes ago, I was wondering about this wallaby sweater, and a few people got back to me. There is this sweater called wallaby sweater, and I was getting two things confused. I was looking for this hooded cardigan sweater with a kangaroo pocket in front, mm-hmm. but I was combining. We are getting some serious dog noises here right now. It sounds like Elvie's being tortured, but when he makes that sound, he's being the worst pest. It's not. He sounds like the victim, but he's the one. I can't see him. I just know what's happening. Anyway, so I was getting Central Park hoodie and this wallaby sweater confused. And so I didn't even really know what I was looking for, but we had some listeners who knew exactly what I was looking for, pointed me in the direction of the sweater. So it's a pullover, not a cardigan. And it has a hood and the kangaroo pocket in front. And it's, you can see it on Ravelry, but you can't download it on Ravelry. You actually have to go to their website and buy the pattern, and they put it in an envelope with a stamp on it and mail it to you.
Which, oh, nice.
Yeah. I sent you a picture of the cover. It's like, this is so old school. This is, anyway. So that's on my list of things that I want to knit, because it is just like you're saying, like this sweatshirty, comfortable thing. And I can see myself getting a lot of wear out of that with the hood. And it's cute, and it's kind of a timeless look. And yeah, it was. I remember people were knitting that like crazy at the same time that people were knitting the Central Park hoodie like crazy. Mm-hmm. I guess we're talking about maybe 10 years ago. And I just hadn't thought about the pattern in a while. Now I want to make it. Just have to find the yarn for it. But mostly I'm knitting stuff for the next video shoot. I have a sweater tutorial, among other things, and sweater tutorials are always a lot of knitting to get all the samples right up to the place that I want them to demonstrate what I'm doing. So I'm knitting little bits of the same sweater over and over and over again, which I don't mind doing at all. I don't mind doing it, but that's pretty much what I'm knitting right now. Yeah. So cool. It's not very exciting. Oh, I guess I do have my recreational knitting is an O-wool scarf that I can't remember the name of.
Yeah. Well, I'm also working on some flip-flop socks. Those are my carry-around project socks.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. I have a sock tutorial coming up, too, so I have that as well. But I'm writing the pattern and knitting at the same time, and so it's not just mindless. I actually
have to think about it.
I have to be completely aware of what I'm doing. It's and taking notes and changing things while I'm doing it to make sure I'm getting it right. So usually my sock, the sock that I carry around with me and knit different places, that's kind of a mindless just round and around and around thing. Yeah, this one, while I'm designing it, it's not, but still good. Well, let's get into it. Magically turn some knitting questions into knitting answers. We have three follow-ups.
Okay.
When I was putting these questions together. So if you don't want to read all three, you can say, take over, Stacey. But if you're up for reading all three, knock yourself out.
Okay. I was just listening to episode 135 and wanted to share an alternative method of tinking back large cables that doesn't involve praying. When I get to the cable, I grab either my cable needle or a separate double point and tink back the first half of the cable onto this new needle rather than my normal right-hand needle. Then I put those stitches to the front or back, wherever they want to go, tink the next half of the cable onto my right-hand needle as normal, then slip the held stitches back onto my main needle. Stitches are always safe and no worrying about having to recover one that's got away. Love your show, Diana from Boston.
Yes, in that episode, I was saying just pull your needle out and you have all those live stitches and untwist them and pick them out and put them back on the needle. What Diane has just described is a safer way of doing it. You have to have your cable needle handy to do it or a double point or whatever. But yes, that is a safer way of doing it. Thank you, Diana.
Yep. All right. Hi, Stacey and Casey. Just to follow up on my steeking question you read in today's podcast, it was a planned steek and the yarn used was merino yarn. It only came undone on the white yarn, not the rest of the colors used. It was all the same brand, so wouldn't expect some colors to be superwash, which I know wouldn't work, and others not. I still have the project, though, so I'm going to let you know if a machine steek can fix it. Thanks, Sarah.
That question was, we had some questions about her question, and she's just answered them here, but she cut for a steek, and the yarn was coming unraveled, and she, you know, wanted some help or some answers, and so I think that was the last or two episodes ago. And I'm glad she spoke up because she said it's only the white yarn that's coming undone. And this is something that I know from working on felted projects where you knit something big in a wool yarn and then you actually put it in the washing machine in a hot wash to deliberately shrink it down so that you get something very different than a normal knitted thing. That's called felting. And I know that when you're working on felted projects, all of the people who felt will, who have used every kind of yarn will tell you don't use the white yarn. There's some kind of bleaching process involved in the white yarn that makes it so that it won't felt the same as the other yarns. Mm-hmm. And so what Sarah has just said here is kind of proves that, is that her yarns are all sticking together just fine except for the white yarn. Hmm. And that is something I remember. I haven't felted a project in a long time, but I do remember this from felting, from when I was doing a lot more felting and writing patterns for felting. Don't use the white yarn.
Hmm.
Off-white's usually fine. White has been bleached somehow and doesn't act like the rest. You haven't heard that before?
No, but it makes sense.
Makes sense. Yes, it does. You're doing great with the follow-ups, Casey.
Well, I was thinking about a project that I had done where I ran out of yarn and I went and bought more yarn, but I was not as experienced. And so then that part of it didn't felt. It's a felted bag that's got intarsia. And so it's really pretty. And then the top part of it's not felted, but it's okay because it kind of works with the design of the bag because the cinched part's not felted, but it was
white. Why didn't that part felt?
I think the yarn was not 100%, or maybe it was super wash, and I was not as experienced to recognize that. So,
but that was a design feature that worked out well for you.
Yeah.
So. And I've seen this bag before. It's really cute.
Yeah, I love this bag.
This episode is sponsored by ModCloth. At ModCloth, there's no such thing as an ordinary outfit. Crafted by a team of in-house designers, their signature styles include hand-drawn prints, standout silhouettes, and an inclusive size range that celebrates all women. It's never too early to start thinking spring. You can stock up on dresses and swimsuits for the season ahead, and I have a little swimsuit story here to tell you. ModCloth believes fashion should celebrate all women. That's why they're expanding their size range from 00 to 28. Got a question about fit? Their team of mod stylists can hook you up with complimentary sizing and styling help. And Casey, you just ordered something, but I am just about to click add to cart on this swimsuit. I don't know. I know a lot of people who shop for dresses and swimsuits on ModCloth. They sell a lot of stuff, but I think a lot of us think dresses, swimsuits, ModCloth. And they have this whole section of swimsuits called Retro Swim. And I like them because they're, I don't know, they're cute and retro, and they're maybe a little bit more modest. Mm-hmm. And I found this one called the Brooke One Piece Swimsuit, and it's a halter top that ties around the back of the neck, and it has, cute. It's kind of low cut on the thighs, and it has like this little waist thing going on that makes your waist look smaller than it maybe is. And I look at the swimsuit, I'm like, I love everything about this swimsuit. It covers everything I want covered. It's, you know, bare shoulder, you know, I like that, you know, I don't know. The only reason it's not in my cart yet is because there are two different colors and I haven't decided which one I want yet. But what did you just order?
I just ordered the Imminent, what did I tell you? Imminent
Affection.
Affection dress. And it's just a kind of off-white and blue kind of heart shapes. And it's A-line. Yep. So it's kind of retro. The thing is, like, I used to think ModCloth was all retro, but it has that vintage element, but other modern styles. So it's more modern.
I think the fabric on that is really modern. I think it's really nice. Yeah,
it has a nice fun print, and I think it'll be a good work dress to wear.
That was my next question. Are you going to wear it for casual with like Birkenstocks? Or are you going to wear it with like
dressy? Oh, I'm planning to wear it like as a work dress when I'm going to a conference, that kind of thing.
Right. It could actually go both ways, though. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A good brunch dress, good work dress.
I love dresses. It's very cute. Dresses are my favorite.
It's a good way to dress here in Texas, too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're going to want to see a picture of that when it comes in. I doubt I'll be posting any swimsuit pictures when my swimsuit comes in, but you know. We also have a coupon code if you want to give ModCloth a try. To get 15% off your purchase of $100 or more, go to modcloth.com and enter code VERYPINK at checkout. This is valid for one-time use and expires on June 9th, 2019. So that's 15% off your purchase of $100 or more, modcloth.com, and enter code VERYPINK, and we will have that link and the promo code in the show notes.
Anyway, okay. I just finished binging all 134 episodes in about 3 weeks. Don't judge me.
That's awesome.
I noticed a bunch of people were questioning how to keep track of what row you were on, especially in a more complicated pattern. I use the app Row Counter, Knitting and Crocheting Lines Count by, I can't even pronounce that. Annapurna Technologies.
That sounds good.
So for project knitters, you can have multiple projects stored in there. It automatically creates a global counter for your overall project, but you can also create other mini counters within the project. So for example, the project I'm working on has gradual increase that is a 6-row repeat. You can set this mini counter to reset after 6 rows, so you always know where you are in that section. You can have multiple mini counters, and you can label them all so you know what section it is for. Another fun feature is that you can import your pattern from your Ravelry library. I haven't done this yet, but I'm sure it's very useful. I hope this helps someone out there, Danielle from Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
We'll go ahead and put that name of that app mm-hmm. in the show notes. I haven't looked at this myself, but a row counter that keeps track of multiple things going on in the same project is really helpful. Mm-hmm. And the example that I use a lot, if someone's having a difficult time imagining why you would need this, is let's say you're working on a cabled sweater front and you have, the pattern says, work 20 rows. And it also says, at the same time, do these armhole decreases. And then it also says, at the same time, work this 6-row cable pattern. And so right there, I've described a situation where you need 3 different counters going for mm-hmm. the length of the sweater, for the armhole decreases, and for the 6-row cable repeat. And I use tally marks a lot. I'll just start marking up my pattern. But an app that will do that, that's pretty good. If it's not confusing to use, it sounds like Danielle likes it. So Danielle, thank you very much for that. We will put that in the show notes. We can, I'm sure other people will comment on their experience with it if they're familiar with that app.
I can't remember what it's called. What's that big knitting app that a lot of people
use? Knit Companion?
Yeah, that one, you can add different counters as well.
That is a big program. What I know that my friend Steven uses that. Our friend Steven uses that. And he's really good at it because he's been using it for a while and he loves the way it helps with charted patterns and stuff. And that's a big program that does a lot. But I think there's a bit of a learning curve to get up to speed with using it. I think this what Danielle just described is maybe kind of a baby step up. Just a counter. I don't know. I haven't looked at it yet, but that's what it sounds like.
Okay. All right. So now we're into the regular questions. Okay. Hi. Why does the yarn tail of my long tail cast on always begin to untwist? Is there any way to prevent this? Thank you, Addie from Blairsville, Georgia.
Hi, Addie. That is just the nature of the long tail cast on, whether you're doing the thumb method like I do it or the slingshot method. It the tail end twists, and so every few stitches you drop it and pick it back, drop it and let it the yarn retwist itself, retwist the plies together, and then keep going. And that's just the nature of the cast on. And it's funny that this question's here because it's a sort of thing that I don't even think about anymore, because when I'm casting on, it's like cast on, cast on, cast on, drop the yarn, cast on, cast on, cast on, drop the yarn, cast on, cast on, cast on. It's just the way it goes. It's just my hands do it automatically without even thinking about it, and then it takes someone actually reminding me that that's what I'm doing. You're not doing anything wrong, Addie. It's just the way it is.
Just the way it is.
Yeah.
All right. Here's a problem for my favorite knitting guru. Do you have any good ideas regarding what to do for socks that are completely stretched out at the calf? The socks in question are my son's worsted weight hunting socks. They are not super wash and are partially felted from much wear. He loves them, but the ribbing at the top is completely stretched out. My mother, who sews, recommended that I sew them using elastic. I wonder if there are any other solutions that you would recommend for this quandary, or if elastic is the only option. Thanks so much, ladies. I've really been enjoying the videos and podcast. You do a great job and are a pleasure to listen to. Cindy in the Piney Woods of Nacogdoches.
Yeah, and she spelled out Nacogdoches for us, which is cute because we know how to pronounce. Of all the things we don't know how to pronounce, we know how to pronounce places in Texas pretty well.
Yeah, I didn't say that it was Texas. I just said Nacogdoches.
Well, we knew it was Texas. Anyway, because of Piney Woods. Right. Cindy, your mom has given you great advice, because my advice would be to get some of that elastic thread and just kind of thread it through the back of the stitches to, and then you just tie it in knots once you make it all the way around. Or I suppose you could spiral up. The elastic thread is exactly what I would do. Your mom might have been thinking of just like wider elastic that you actually sew in. That would be a lot stronger. Do you have any other solution for this, Casey? I think elastic is the answer.
No, I think elastic is the answer.
Need to make a trip to Joanne's. In the sewing department.
Yep,
that's all a good, right. If the socks are well loved, it is totally worth the effort to put that in.
Yeah, and he must have big calves too.
right. Well, or he's pulling him up, or I don't know.
Okay. Dear Stacey and Casey, what is your opinion on subscription knit clubs? Have you ever tried one of these services? If so, which ones? I like the idea of getting yarn every month or quarter, but I'm hesitant to subscribe since the yarn and patterns are a mystery. I just wanted to get your thoughts on this. Also, I learned about Ottlight lamps from your podcast and purchased one a few months ago. It has made seeing my knitting so much easier. Keep up the great work on the videos and podcast. Crystal from Norman, Oklahoma. She's hoping to be the first question asker from Oklahoma, but I don't think she is.
I don't know. She's the first person from Oklahoma to make a big deal out about being the first. I don't know, Crystal. I don't know. As far as subscription knit clubs go, we're talking about a service that you pay every month or every quarter or whatever, and you get a box of yarn and sometimes patterns and sometimes accessories or cute things or whatever. And the part of the fun is that you don't know what's coming, right? It's you sign up with a little bit of trust in the company that you're signing up with, and it's usually exciting and a pleasure, and it's kind of just like getting good mail. It's a fun present to get in the mail. And I like them. I am getting Knit Crate right now, and Knit Crate has a few different subscription kits, and I think I'm just getting the regular one. And I guess the real question is, looking back at what that knit club has sent out previously, what their patterns look like, kind of the amount of money that you want to spend. Are you a person who enjoys sock yarn, you know, hand-dyed sock yarn that's $30 a hank, or something less expensive and maybe a more quick knit project, or, you know, all of these features, all of these factors. You can look at Ravelry and see what people are knitting from the yarn they're getting and get a good idea of what they are. I don't know. I like them. Casey, do you belong to any subscription knit clubs right now?
No, the Stacy's Leftover Yarn Club.
Stacy's Leftover Yarn Club.
No, yeah. Just because I have too much in my stash. And every time I think about it, I'm like, it would stress me out to get more yarn to feel like I have to knit and keep up with it.
It would stress you out to belong to this happy male club.
Yes. I'd feel like I'd have to hurry up. The thing I was just thinking, because actually, if you get those, they're usually small projects. So if you like that yarn, some of them, those yarns are hard to get outside of the club.
Yes.
So if you like that yarn and you want, and actually I'm doing this right now where I went to Ravelry and I liked some yarn that came in a kit. I went out and reached out to other people who were selling theirs in their stash.
Oh.
So I could have enough of that yarn to make something bigger, because most of those projects are small projects.
So you're like scrounging yarn from all these people on Ravelry to get this one particular yarn that you couldn't get unless you belong to the club, and you don't belong to the club. Very good, Casey. That's thinking.
I'm sneaky.
You want to work harder for your yarn than just getting it in the mail.
That's right.
Yeah, so. I think it's just a matter of, it would be hard, let me say this, it would be hard to jump on board with a new yarn subscription kit if you can't see their history.
Yeah.
Unless they gave you a really good deal on the kit, you know, like introductory price or something. It'd be hard to sell that. But if you can always just look and see what people are getting. Usually you can also go on Instagram and see what the hashtag would be. Like hashtag knit crate will show you exactly what their kits are sending out and exactly what people are knitting from them, because people are always taking pictures because the unboxing is exciting.
Yeah. And that's
anyway, I think it's a good idea. I like getting squishy mail.
Yeah, and it's nice to have like a sampler of different things and maybe different patterns that you wouldn't normally knit. And sometimes they put little tools and other surprises in there.
Yeah. It can be really fun.
Yeah. Hi, Stacey Casey. I have a question about buttons. I'm making a shawl that requires buttons, the Ohm shawl by Andrea Mowry. I think you knit that, didn't you?
I did, yes.
And I was thinking of using wooden ones. Do you think wood buttons would get destroyed when washing the shawl? Is there any magical way of easily removing the buttons before washing? Thank you very much, Melissa from snowy cold Boston, Massachusetts.
She spelled out how to pronounce Boston.
Boston.
Bahstun. Melissa, yes, I knit that shawl and I used wood buttons. So I think I'm an expert at but I can tell I'm not an expert on things that involve more sewing than knitting, but I can tell you I used the yarn that the pattern recommended and I used the buttons that I picked out, wood buttons. The pattern did not recommend buttons. Maybe clear that I just picked wood buttons because I thought they looked great. Now, the yarn that I used, I think, is a hand wash, dry flat yarn, so there's no danger to the buttons. But if you've used a different yarn, like a superwash yarn that needs to go through the washer, I think just buying good quality buttons, I don't know. I don't know what it takes for a button to be machine washable, or if all the buttons at Joann's got two plugs in this podcast already. They did not pay for either one. If all the buttons at Joann's are safe to put in the washing machine, Casey, do you know anything about buttons and what is good and what is bad for washing?
No, I think it matters how well you sew it on. But I don't imagine that you need to wash that shawl very often.
Right. Exactly. Unless you're wearing it like clam digging or something. Which I don't know
how
often.
This is my clam digging shawl.
Well, do you dig clams in Boston? I don't know.
I think you do.
I think you probably do. I don't have a great answer to this. Her second question, though, was, is there a way of easily removing the buttons before washing? And I think you can. I think the easiest way to remove them is to just cut them out and sew them back on again. I don't think there's a magical way without using some kind of special button that goes on and off easily. You know, I think sewing on a button is easy enough that just cutting it off. But I don't know. I think you should be able to wash things with buttons on them and not worry too much, especially if it's well, if it's hand wash and set out flat to dry, the buttons are going to be fine. Mm-hmm. You're not doing anything hard to it. But
yeah,
maybe someone who sews and knows a lot about buttons will chime in here and tell us what is good and what is bad, and what, because we can all learn something.
Yeah. Okay. Hi, ladies. I love the Very Pink website for its wealth of information and very much enjoy your podcasts. I find them informative as well as entertaining. I have a very simple question that I can't seem to answer for, but I'm sure you both, Stacy and Casey, have answered in the past. My problem is seaming ribbing. For example, if I knit a hat flat instead of in the round, I can seam the stockinette fine. Well, not fine, but acceptable. But the ribbing is a mess. So if I have a 2x2 rib that I've tried, and I've tried the following: start the row with 2 knits and end with 2 purls. I have tried starting with the row with 1 knit, 2x2 rib, and the row with 1 knit, so that I'm seaming 2 knits together. Either way, it just looks sloppy. Could I add 1 or 2 more stitches to the row so that I'm seaming between 2 knit stitches and 2 purl stitches?
You don't have to keep going.
This is Karen from Lansing, Michigan.
Yeah. And she, the reason I stopped you is because she's going down a rabbit hole, and I have a simple answer for her. She doesn't have to go down this rabbit hole of suggestions. Karen, thank you for that question. And this is, I love this question, because when I am knitting someone else's pattern and there's seaming involved and there's ribbing, and when I see that they've done it right, I want to go up to that designer and give them a hug and say, thank you for thinking through all of these little things. Because the trick to seaming things, like, you've knit a hat, it's flat, you want to seam it in the round, you want to seam, mattress stitch, 2 knit stitches next to 2 knit stitches. So in the case of the hat that Karen has just described, you want to start with knit stitches on the right side and end with knit stitches on the right side, if we're working 2x2 rib, right? So the reason for that is because the mattress stitch is going to eat up 1 stitch on each side when you're seaming that. So you have 4 knit stitches together, and you're, 2 of those are going to get eaten up in the seam, and you're left with 2 knit stitches together. And in 2x2 rib, that's exactly what you want. Knit 2, purl 2, knit 2. So the seam is going to look perfect with the rest of the ribbing. So you want to start and end your flat piece with knit stitches on the right side, so that when 2 stitches get eaten up in the seam, it all looks beautiful.
Yep.
That was a technical answer. Usually I ask your opinion on things, Casey, but this was a black and white question, black and white answer, no gray
no
areas.
Opinions.
No. That's all we have time for this week, Casey.
Okay.
So if people want to find you online.
My website is Casey Knits. That's the letter K, the letter C, .com.
Very good. And if you want to find me online, there is, of course, the Very Pink Knits YouTube channel and verypink.com. And that is all we have time for this week. So until next week, stay warm, my friends.